Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levinger, your host for an hour of science fiction. Later on, it's X-1 from 1956, but first a broadcast of suspense called The Voice of Company A, a CBS episode from the 3rd of August, 1958.
And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
During its long and distinguished career on the air, Suspense has never taken an editorial stand until now. Now we state unequivocally that this program is against murder. Oh, we play around with the more titillating and entertaining aspects of murder from time to time, but fundamentally, we're against it. As a personal, national, or international policy. Only those in favor of murder will find anything objectionable or controversial in the next half hour. The story you're about to hear is but a tiny word of protest. Perhaps it is too little. But please God, let it not be too late. Listen. Listen then as Everett Sloan stars in The Voice of Company A, which begins in just a moment.
And now, The Voice of Company A, starring Everett Sloan. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I sat in my lab at Cape Canaveral near the giant missile that would launch our transmitter. I looked at the powerful sending set, knowing that soon we'd toss it into space to scream crazily year after year at a crazy world. We tried to keep the lab quiet, isolated. But in the last few days, the tension of the mess outside had somehow trickled in. I was bushed.
Doctor?
Yes, Colonel?
I think it's coming. Here, read this. Top priority from defense to me.
From the Secretary of Defense to Commander Operation Screamer. International situation deteriorating. Commence countdown 0500 Zulu. Midnight, our time?
That's right. Is your section ready?
Yes, we're ready. Here's the little monster. I just loaded the tape. You want to hear it?
Yes. Oh, brother.
Yes, when we get all six of these in orbit, you might as well throw away your radio and TV. This is all you'll hear. But this is what we wanted.
Turn it off.
Okay.
Well, I guess we can do without the soap operas if it jams their military frequencies.
The soap operas will lose their audience anyway when the ballistic missiles hit. You know, this thing will probably survive us, Colonel. You ever think of that? Screaming away up there when there's nobody left to hear it? It's kind of funny in a way.
George, you're tired.
Were you in London, Colonel, in World War II?
No, Burma. Why?
I was in London when the V-2s first hit. 2nd Louis, Company A, 16th Infantry. I was on a 72-hour pass with some of my guys. We thought the V-2s were the last word, Colonel. A regular bomb you could hear coming. You had somebody to be sore at that last few seconds. Some pilot risked his tail to drop it anyway. Somebody up there hated you. At least you knew that. It wasn't humane, but at least it was human. But a V-2, Colonel, it goes so fast you don't hear it. And there's nobody to hate except some guy sitting in a control panel a couple hundred miles away. And now we've got ICBMs. 5,000 miles through space. Oh, yes. We've come a long way. A long way.
Yes. Well, I'll report that we're ready.
The colonel looked at me strangely as he left. I knew he thought I was cracking. And maybe he was right. Almost hating to do it, I flicked on the radio, knowing what I'd hear.
Classes under the age of 50 were called to the colors in France today. Germany has mobilized the reserve components of the new Wehrmacht. Ambassador Lippincott arrived this afternoon at Washington National Airport and said that he saw no hope of averting war. ICBM...
I turned it off. Once I thought it could never happen again. Lying in the broken plaster and spilled beer in a London pub, with the sergeant's body pinning me down and Pinky yelling for his mother and Botchner groaning in a corner, I knew it couldn't. But it was happening again, and there seemed to be nothing I or anybody else could do to stop it. I turned to the transmitter to unplug it from the test console. That's when I saw him looking at the set. Hey, how did you get... Who are you?
Hello, Lieutenant. Or it's Doctor now, ain't it?
Botchner. Is it Botchner?
Yeah, Lieutenant. It's me, Sad Sack Botchner.
But you were killed. You got killed in that pub.
Well, in a manner of speaking.
No, no, I must be cracking up.
No, Lieutenant, relax. I got a message for you is all. Me and Pinky and the Sarge and Pete, we drew cards to see who'd come back. I won.
But I don't...
So you're gonna toss this thing into space.
Yes.
And it's got like a tape that plays over and over, fouls up the radios all over the world.
Yes, except our military frequencies.
Now, ain't that clever? Me and Pinky and the Sarge and Pete, we get creamed in that crummy pub in London, and you come out smelling like a rose. And for what? So you can figure out something like this?
Now, look, Botchner, it wasn't only me, the Defense Department,
yeah,
and the...
Yeah, I know. I've been down that road, Lieutenant. Well, me and Pinky and the Sarge and Pete figure you ought to put something better than what you got on that tape before it's too late.
Something better? Like what?
Well, I'll tell you, Lieutenant. Pinky thought it up. Remember, he was always kind of screwy on religion.
So he told me, standing gray-faced and floppy as ever in my lab. I knew I was dreaming. I had to be. He told me what to put on the tape. And I laughed. What is this, a joke?
We don't do much joking, Lieutenant. Mostly we sit around thinking. 10 million guys in different uniforms, thinking of the dames we didn't get to meet, and the summer evenings we didn't get to smell, and the kids we never got to have. Well, you better do what we say, Lieutenant, because tough as it is at times, it's better here than it is there. We know, Lieutenant. We know.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense. And now, starring Everett Sloan, Act Two of The Voice of Company A.
I sat for a long time wondering if I'd really seen Botchner, wondering if I was losing my mind. And this idea of Pinky's, or whosever it was, it was crazy. But I knew suddenly that I had to try it. I had to try it, but I had to move fast. Once the installation crew arrived to pick up the jammer, it'd be too late. There were almost 100 technicians working in my section. Like any group of Americans, they came from every background. Some, like von Terhoff, were newly naturalized citizens. I buzzed my secretary on the intercom.
Yes, Doctor?
Get von Terhoff up here right away, Carolyn. And Pierre Duval, he speaks French, doesn't he? And that new technician, Barbara Chang, does she speak Chinese?
Yes, I think so. Why?
Send her up. Who speaks Russian?
Russian? Well, I don't know.
Poznansky. A lot of Poles know Russian. Send him in, too. And, Carolyn?
Yes, Doctor?
I want to see them one at a time. It was easy with Duval and Poznansky. They accepted my story without a question. But von Terhoff looked at me strangely.
I did not know you were a religious man here, Doctor. You say that this is for your minister?
Yes, it's just an idea he had for next Sunday's sermon, Von. If you'll just speak into the mic.
Well, it seems to me a strange time to...
Well, it'll only take a minute.
All right. Yeah, ready?
Ready.
Du sollst dich töten.
The pretty Chinese microwave expert was so enthusiastic, I hated myself when I lied to her. I hadn't been to church since World War II.
He couldn't matter to his congregation, Doctor, but a native Chinese wouldn't understand the religious significance.
Well, why not?
Well, Confucius put it another way.
Well, recite that then.
Wun hui jogi, si go gin ye loi, wa yi guo da gao ni, da si gua go gin ni.
When she left, I held the mic in my hand for a long while. Finally, feeling strangely humble, I recorded the English version myself. When I was through, I spliced the tape into a loop like the jamming tape so that it would repeat over and over. Over and over, year after year. I took the jamming tape out of the transmitter and started to put in my new one. Was I crazy? Then I remembered the twisted bodies in the London pub, and Pinky and the Sergeant Pete, and of course, Sad Sack Bochner. They seemed suddenly very close. I finished. The installation crew arrived and took the transmitter away, and soon it was midnight and the countdown began. My launching station was in the blockhouse, but if I got there too soon, I'd have to ground test the screamer and the colonel would learn what was on the tape. And if I didn't get there at all, they might not launch. So I waited and waited, watching through the lab window while the last man left the missile gleaming in the Florida moonlight. It was the longest half hour in my life.
-3 minutes, 30 seconds.
They were looking for me now. It was time to go. Running across the sand, I looked up at the missile. There, high in the nose, rode the Sphere that carried the jammer.
T-minus 2 minutes. Condition red.
Had I cut it too close? As I reached the concrete blockhouse, the missile seemed to be straining at an invisible leash. Vapor from its liquid oxygen was curling about its base.
T-minus 1 minute.
Hey!
59.
Hey, let me in! It's Dr. Green!
56.
I looked again at the huge rocket. I could hear the pumps beginning to deliver fuel to the nozzle. In less than a minute, a quarter of a million pounds of fiery thrust would blast the area, and I'd shrivel like an ant on a hot coal.
Hey!
Hey! Dr. Griggs, holy cow, Doc, get in here!
38,
37. Where's the colonel?
Right here. Where have you been? This thing hasn't been ground tested.
Well, it isn't necessary. It'll transmit.
Countdown procedure says do it, we'll do it. Now move, doctor.
But I checked it on the console. I tell you, it'll transmit.
I want to hear that signal.
It'll work, I tell you.
Oh, help me, doctor. If you don't get going, I'll stop the launch. Now tune it in.
19,
I had to do it.
17,
as slowly
16,
as I could, 15, I twisted the knobs 14, on the test receiver.
13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8.
What's that?
What's going on? The colonel lunged for the panic button that would stop the launch. I grabbed his arm.
Let me go. Hold it. Hold that bird. Corporal. Put this man under arrest. He's crazy. Or he's an enemy spy.
Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill.
Who is the enemy, Colonel? Who is the enemy?
In a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense. And now, starring Everett Sloan, Act 3 of The Voice of Company A.
They treated me all right in the detention cell at Cape Canaveral. They gave me a radio, the morning papers, all the coffee I could drink. They sent for a psychiatrist to see if I was crazy. Two men from the FBI questioned me to see if I was a spy. Then I was alone until the guard brought in breakfast.
Hey, Doc, what's going on?
You tell me.
Well, my wife and I, we sit down to eat this morning. We turn on the radio to find out if we ought to be digging a hole somewhere. And this voice comes on saying, "Thou shalt not kill." And in all foreign languages. Now, my wife, she thinks it's the end of the world.
Well, she may be right.
What are they going to do to you?
Try me for espionage, they tell me. If they don't figure I'm nuts.
Doc?
Yes?
We don't figure you're nuts.
When the guard left, I turned on the radio to hear the worst. And it was the worst.
And launched a formal protest against what they called U.S. celestial property. propaganda. From Washington, no word yet on what is intended by the strange screamer satellite, only instructions. Instructions on what to do if its passage jammed tunnel-rad frequency during a ballistic missile bombardment.
Suddenly, I heard it faintly, blanking out the announcer. I looked at my watch. Yes, that was it. It was due overhead.
Tu ne tueras point. Thou shalt not kill.
I switched off the set. I hadn't fully realized the power of our transmitter until that moment. And I hadn't realized the power of the message. A shiver raced up my spine. I felt suddenly that I was not alone. Then I saw him, slouching at the window. Bochner?
Hello, Lieutenant. In the guardhouse, huh? Remember when you tossed me in the stockade for being AWOL?
Well, this ought to square it.
Pinky and the Sarge and Pete and me, we've been watching things. It's working out great.
Oh, yeah, just fine.
There's an awful lot of people don't want to fight this war, Lieutenant. You ought to see them in Europe and China.
Yeah?
Don't you fret, Lieutenant. Things is going to turn out all right. You see, Lieutenant, we know.
Slowly he disappeared, slowly fading. It was weird. I knew that he only existed in my mind, but as the day wore on and the next day and the next, I wondered if he weren't right. Every 4 hours, the satellite broke in with that simple message. But in the interval, the radio began to talk of reports of a mutiny in the Hungarian army, a revolution against the Czech regime, small religious revival starting in Germany.
The Defense Department is mum about what was actually intended in the satellite launch Monday. Results are clear. Iron Curtain countries are busy battling anti-war sentiment. International tension has eased. Ambassador Lippincott flew an hour ago to a hastily planned conference in Geneva. More news after the 9 p.m. passage of the satellite.
And the fourth night, the cell door opened for the colonel.
Hello, George.
Hello, Colonel. Did you bring the firing squad?
George, I got a dispatch from defense.
Yes?
You're to be released.
Released?
That's right. And we're not launching the rest of the screamers. They decided that the crisis has passed. Now that the thing's in perfect orbit, they want us to stop them.
But we can't.
I know, George. It's solar powered. It could broadcast for the next 20 years. 50.
Yes. And when it quits, Colonel, maybe we better launch another one.
Hmm? Oh, yes. I see what you mean. George.
Yes?
One question. We know about Duval and the Chang girl and Poznanski. Who recorded the English? Is that your voice?
I thought of the smashed bodies of my men in that London pub. Pinky and the Sarge and Pete and Sad Sack Bochner. My voice, Colonel? No. Let's just say that's the voice of Company A.
Du sollst dich töten. Du sollst dich töten.
Wui hi, jubi, si gogin yelui. Wai guo dagani, dasi guagogini.
Не убей. Не убей.
Tu ne tueras point. Tu ne tueras point.
Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill.
Suspense. In which Everett Sloan starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Voice of Company A by Michael Frost. In just a moment, the names of the supporting players and a word about next week's story of suspense. Supporting Everett Sloan in The Voice of Company A were Lillian Bayef, John Daner, Barney Phillips, Jack Crucian, and Sam Pierce. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with The Diary of Sophronia Winters, starring Mercedes McCambridge. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
night news first on the CBS Radio Network.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 3rd, 1958, on CBS, the eighth and final credited story for writer Michael Frost for the series and radio programs during its golden era. He mostly wrote for Suspense, featuring stories with a sci-fi twist, like his stories The Invisible Ape and the well-known Christmas broadcast from Suspense called Dog Star. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for X-1 with a program called Sea Shoot, an NBC broadcast from February 8, 1956.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire.
Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, The Sea Shoot, by Isaac Asimov.
We were on our way home to Earth when it happened. Six of us, coming home as passengers aboard the merchant spaceship Starfire. At the start of the Second Interstellar War, the one between Earth and the planet Chloro. And then it happened.
Now hear this. Condition red. Condition red. We are under attack from a Chloran battlecruiser. All hands forward to battle stations. Confined to the after cabin. Condition red. We are being attacked.
The interception by the Chloran cruiser, the murderous running jewel of energy blasts and force field defenses. We huddled in the passenger's after cabin, terrified, not knowing how the battle was going. We could hear the desperate bursts of steam through the steering tubes as the Starfire maneuvered to dodge the enemy attacks. And then...
Now what?
The beginning of the end, you might call it.
Well, what does it mean, Stuart? You were a space pilot.
It means our generators have been drained of energy. We can't fight back.
But, Monsieur...
All right, don't
we...
worry. They won't destroy us. They need our ship too badly. They'll simply board us and take over.
But what about the crew?
The crew, Colonel? If they have any sense, they'll surrender. If they choose to fight, they'll... Be very still.
Oh, Mother in Heaven, help
Would
us.
You be still? If only those fools on deck will surrender without a struggle.
They are fighting.
Yes, Ian.
We've got to help them.
All right, don't open that door.
We just can't let them die.
You can't help
them. I'm going.
Stop him.
All right.
Anesthesia.
Shut the door quickly.
Anesthesia.
My brother. That poor fool.
I'll get them. My brother, I swear to you, I'll get them.
Yeah, you better cover his body.
The brutes. The monstrous green-skinned brutes.
They're no more brutes than we are, Colonel. This is a war.
Are you defending them?
I'm merely pointing out the facts.
I ought to strangle you.
Why not save it for the Chloros?
I will. I promise you I will.
Well, they're probably deciding right now what to do with us. We might as well settle down and wait.
We sat there.
and listened while the Cloran invaders killed off the members of the Starfire's crew. Among us was Colonel Anthony Windham, an old Colonel Blimp type with a lame leg. Windham had spent his life in the militia back on Earth, but had never seen a battle. There was Demetrius Poliorkitis, who had just watched being killed by a chlorocarbonizer. Polly was a huge man. He and his brother had tried truck farming in Arcturus and given it up after two seasons. Then there was LeBlanc, a sensitive, frightened young man of 22, and Randolph Mullen, who looked like somebody's caricature of a bookkeeper. A mild, balding milk toast. John Stewart. I was the only one who'd ever had contact with the Chloro people. I had a pair of artoplasm hands to prove it.
It is quiet now.
Yeah, they've finished with the crew.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes, Mr. Mullen.
What do you think will happen next?
Well, they'll put a prize crew of two aboard and take us to one of their home planets as prisoners of war.
Only two of the Chloros will stay aboard.
Well, two is all they'll need. Why, Colonel? You're thinking of leading a gallant raid to retake the ship?
Well, simply a point of information, Dasher.
All right, then let me give you another point of information. If you want to commit suicide quick, just open that bulkhead door. Three steps inside, you'd fall on your face.
But why?
Don't you smell anything, LeBlanc? Get close to the door.
It smells like gas.
Yeah, it is gas. Chlorine gas. They breathe it like we breathe oxygen. They've chlorinated the whole cruise compartment. One big whiff of that and we'd all be dead. So just forget about rushing the Chloros.
How do you know so much about their habits, Stuart?
I lived on a Chloro planet for 6 months. You see these hands? They were mangled in the oxygenating machinery of my own quarters. They grew these artoplasm things and operated. They're weak, but at least I have hands again.
Monsieur Stewart.
Yeah.
Will they kill us?
No.
Why do you say that?
Because in their own way, they're gentlemen. Probably we'll be interned for the duration.
You call them gentlemen? After they kill my brother in cold blood, you call them gentlemen?
You know, Stewart, you sound more and more like a blasted greeny sympathizer. Blasted, man. Where's your patriotism and loyalty?
Belongs with honesty and decency, regardless of the shape of the being it appears in. This is a ridiculous war. Why are we fighting these people? We can live only on planets with oxygen, and oxygen is poison to them. They can live only in chlorine atmosphere, which is deadly to us. Yet we're fighting them over a bunch of worthless asteroids that neither of us can live on comfortably.
Well, it's a matter of principle.
It's a matter of stupid pride and greed.
I don't like what you say, mister.
Why not?
Because you talk too nice about these greeny scum. They're good to you, eh? Well, they weren't good to my brother. They killed him. And I think maybe I'll kill you, you rotten greeny...
Right, hold him!
Hold him! Grab him!
I can't break his hold! They are coming in.
Holy, let him go.
They saved your life this time. But when I'm finished with them...
Quiet. I think they're opening the lock.
Get with us.
Holy, don't lose your head. They'll kill us all.
I greet you, Earthmen.
The Chloro was not a pleasant sight to anyone unused to it. He was about the height of an Earthman, but the top of him was just a green stalk with eyes. He was still wearing a spacesuit to protect him from the oxygen in our compartment. In one of his tendrils, he carried a Cloran gun. As he stood in the doorway, I could see Poliorkitis' eyes begin to glisten with rage. Then, with a bellow like a huge bull, he threw himself at the Chloro.
This compartment, we shall be forced to destroy you. That is all I have to communicate.
Hadn't we better do something for Mr. Poliorkides?
Oh, he'll be all right. Just hoist him up on the cot.
Good man.
Yes. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. By Polly. Can you hear me, you stupid brute?
His voice is coming back.
Yeah. Now, I know what's going on in that thick skull of yours, Polly. You think that when the paralysis wears off, you'll ease your feelings by slamming me around some more. Well, if you do, it'll be curtains for all of us.
How do you mean, sir?
None of you know the Chloros the way I do. Unlike us, they assume automatically that any group of Earthmen they find together comprises a biological grouping, like an ant colony. The result is that they consider the group as something, well, something holy. Now, they'd never break us up. And if one of us did any harm to another, they'd have us all executed as a bunch of chlorotype perverts, a non-functioning group. So call all the names you want, but keep your hands to yourself or we're finished. My little speech had a sobering effect on the group. For the next 24 hours, we did little besides eat our rations and think. I tried to evaluate them. The colonel I had figured for an old windbag. Poliorkides was a hate-filled brute. LeBlanc would crack first. He was like a frightened child. Mullen? Mullen was a nonentity, a mouse instead of a man. Everything he did seemed prissyish. His voice had the quality of furtively rustling underbrush.
How long did you say the trip would take, Mr. Stewart?
Well, the Chloro said about 2 weeks.
Gentlemen, if I may interrupt.
Colonel?
Now, it has occurred to me that perhaps you know of some weakness that might enable us to overcome these Chloros.
The only weakness they've got is that they can't stand oxygen.
Oh, but there must be some way to get the best of them, man. After all, there are only two.
Before I answer, Colonel, I have to know your motive. Is it to save your own skin or help Earth win the war?
Oh, dash it, man, to help our side, of course. What we're looking for is the way to save the ship or Earth without losing our lives, yes?
Well, all right, let's take a vote then. LeBlanc?
I have a wife waiting on Earth, Mr. Stewart. I do not want to die.
Uh-huh. Hero number one. What about you, Mullen?
I don't see how we could accomplish it without...
Hero number two. Well, Poliorkides?
When I kill Chloros, it will be with my bare hands. On their planet, I will kill dozens, I promise you.
Three down. Well, Colonel, don't you want to march to glory, an old militiaman like you?
Your attitude is very cynical and unbecoming, Stewart.
I see. Well, then I'll have to blow the ship up myself.
Stewart!
Don't worry, Colonel. I don't intend to be a dead hero.
Of course, there is a way we might do it.
What did you say, Mr. Mullen?
There's a spacesuit and magnetic boots stored in that locker over there. We might be able to reach the control room from the outside of the ship.
The outside? But how would we get outside?
Well, this compartment has a sea chute. It must.
What is a sea chute?
A sea chute, my boy, is a casualty chute. It doesn't get talked about much, but all the main compartments have them. They're just little airlocks down which you slide a corpse. Burial in space.
Oh, blast it, Mullen. Suppose you did get outside. How could you re-enter the ship?
Through the steam tubes, the ones they use to guide the ship.
Wait a minute, Mullen. What do you know about steam tubes? I thought you were a bookkeeper.
Well, on Arcturus, I got interested in spaceship models. I studied all about them. On my own time, of course.
Yeah, naturally.
At any rate, I learned that the steam tubes have an access vent directly to the control room for repairs and so forth.
And the Chloros, they are in the control room.
What do you think, Stuart?
Well, it's a video sort of idea, but it might just work. We could get permission from the Chloros to open the sea chute and bury Polly's brother. Then one of us could slip into it, work forward, and climb up through the steam tube. The question being, which one?
What about you? You with your loud talk and your sneers.
I'm no hero, Polly. I've already said that. My object is to stay alive. the steam tube let go while you were in it, you'd be broiled like a lobster. Now, how about the colonel here?
If I were younger, blasted, I'd trounce you. You know very well with my injured leg.
Yeah, of course. Not to mention my artificial hands. Well, now, what unfortunate deformities do the rest of us have? Polly?
You just keep talking, Mr. Big Mouth, and pretty soon we'll kick your teeth in.
Of course, that's your standard reply to everything, isn't it? LeBlanc, will you do it?
I cannot.
Not even to get back to Denise?
Please, I cannot.
LeBlanc needn't go. I'll do it.
What?
After all, it is my idea.
Wait a minute. Are you serious, Mullen?
Yes.
Well, how? I don't understand. Why? Why you?
Well, it seems no one else will do it.
But that's no reason, man.
I can't think of any other.
Look here. Do you really intend to go through with it, sir?
Yes, I suppose I do.
Well, dash it, man. Let me shake your hand. You're an earthman, by heaven. You do this thing, and win or die, I'll bear witness for you.
It was quite a moment. Mullen the Mouse had suddenly turned into a man. He just stood there awkwardly while the colonel pupped his hand. Polyarchitis seemed stunned. LeBlanc was wide-eyed. And I? Well, I was in a peculiar position, one in which I rarely found myself. I had absolutely nothing to say.
That ought to bring them.
I hear one.
What is it, Earthman?
One member of our unit is dead, as you know. We request permission to jettison his body out of the casualty chute.
You may do so.
You'll have to open the chute lock from the control room.
I will do so. Is there anything else?
No. Nothing else. Thank you. Oh, boy. All right, come on now. We'll have to work fast. Mullen, get into a space suit from the emergency locker. Polly, help Mom with those magnetic boots.
Here.
I'm working as fast as I can. The arm. There.
All right, give me the helmet.
The helmet?
Okay. Now, Mullen, you better scratch your nose if you have to. It's your last chance for a while.
What about radio contact?
You can talk to us. We'll listen in on the helmet set in one of the other suits. The chloros won't have their set on the interphone frequency.
Wait a moment.
What for?
Dash it, what's he going to use for a weapon? He isn't big enough to fight them barehanded.
Ah, no, that's true. Well, how about one of those oxygen cylinders?
Good idea. Use it to bash them over the head.
Now, give him one of the cylinders equipped with a reducing valve. Now, look, Mullen, if your magnetic boots fail and you start drifting away into space, open this valve. See that? Now, you can use it like a miniature jet and try to blow yourself back to the ship. Understand?
I think so.
Well, I only hope it works. All right, here goes the helmet.
You'd better hurry. The light is on over the sea chute.
Yeah. That means they've opened the lock. Here. Now, can you hear me? LeBlanc, give me that other space helmet.
Yes, here.
Let me switch on the radio. Can you hear me, Mullen?
I hear you.
Fine. Plenty of air?
Air's okay.
Uh-huh. Polly, open the sea chute. Okay, now help him in. Are ready?
Ready.
Well, good luck. Close the chute. Pull the ejector valve. Now. He's out. Oh, God help him.
The light is out.
Yeah. The chloros have closed the chute lock.
I don't suppose he has much of a chance.
No.
Do you think he knew it?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Should I try to contact him on the radio?
Yes, I think. Wait a minute.
What is it?
Listen, the chloro's coming.
Good Lord. He's sure to miss Mullen.
Yeah, wait. Polly, get your brother's body on the cot. Put a blanket over it. Pretend it's Mullen asleep.
Polly, for heaven's sake.
My brother.
All right, you've got to do it, man. It's our only chance.
Listen, if Mullen could go out there and...
Very well. I will do it.
Earthman.
Yes.
You have jettisoned the body?
Yes.
Good. Is there something further we can do?
No, I... We are very tired. Our grief is very great at losing one of our unit. We would like to rest alone.
I will respect your wishes. I see that one of your units sleeps already.
Yes, yes, Mr. Mullen was overcome with grief.
I leave you.
Oh, brother. Polly, I thought sure you were going to rush him.
With that brave little guy out there, what do you think I am anyway? And to think I laughed at him makes me ashamed.
Yeah, I guess I've been saying some things that maybe weren't too funny. I owe all of you an apology.
Do you think it's safe to try the radio?
Yeah, we better. Hello? Hello, Mullen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Where are you?
I'm standing on the outside of the ship.
All right, now take care. One misstep and you'll be marooned in space. Now, can you find the steam tubes?
I think I've found one of them already. I can feel the rim. I just hope it doesn't let go when I get inside.
Be careful.
I'm going into the tube now. I can feel the ladder rungs they used to repair the inside.
Yeah, well, keep in contact.
I'm in the tube now.
Good Lord. They've let go with a blast.
Yeah, well, it may be the starboard tubes. Mullen.
Still here.
Oh.
They used the other tubes, fortunately. Now, if they don't try to correct for over-deflection...
Yeah, keep moving.
I seem to be... Wait. Yes, yeah, I'm at the end of the tube now, where it opens into the control room.
Good, good. Now, look, there's a small metal door there. Can you feel it?
Yes, I'm afraid it's locked from the other side.
Oh.
I can't budge it.
Mullen, listen to me.
Stuart, I'm scared. I'm terribly scared.
Yeah, all right. Now, hang on. Don't blow up. Listen to me. Are you listening?
Yes.
Take the spare oxygen tank. Bang on the metal door that leads to the control room. The chloros are bound to hear you. When one of them comes to investigate, try to hit him with a cylinder. Now, aim for the stalk on top of his body. Try to blind him. Will you do that?
I'll try.
Well, now, go on. Only one can come. The other will stay at the controls. Now, start banging. Any luck?
No, I hear something. Something's opening the lock. The door now. I hear...
Mullen, what happened? Mullen, can you hear me? Mullen! Mullen!
Oh, it's no use. They must have gotten him.
He was one brave little guy, that one.
But suppose they have just got him in the control room. I mean, maybe he is not dead.
Well,
then maybe one of us could rush them. We could bang on the door and jump the chloro.
Well, the first guy would be a cinch to die.
Well, I would be willing to take the chance.
You?
Why not? I could try.
Not you. I'm the strongest. I do it.
Now listen, you chaps. I'm an old man. I've got nothing to live for anyway. Suppose I throw myself at the ray gun.
Wait a minute. What's going on here? 20 minutes ago, there wasn't one of you who'd risk his little finger to get us out of here. Now you're falling all over each other.
Maybe Mr. Mullen teaches us a lesson, huh?
Yeah. Okay, Polly, give me the wrench. I'll start banging on the door. They say that selflessness is contagious. I guess maybe it is. I'd been a cynic all my life, a man who believed in nothing. Well, I'd come face to face with four human beings who proved that I'd been living a lie. I knew what I was going to do now. When the Chloro came to investigate our compartment, I had it all planned. If only my poor, weak hands would hold out long enough. Ready?
Ready.
Here goes. That should bring him.
Try again.
Wait, listen.
Shh.
It's at the door.
Get ready.
It's opening the lock.
For poor old Mullen now.
Steady.
No!
Get him out of it!
Wait!
Get him out of it!
Why'd you stop the car?
Wait!
Good Lord! It's Mullen!
Get the helmet off! That's it. All right, now lift. Mullen, are you all right?
I seem to be quite all right.
Well, the Chloros.
Both dead. At least I hope so.
Well, what happened?
Well, I banged on the steam tube hatch and a Chloro opened it.
Yeah?
I hit him with a cylinder. It blinded him, I guess, but didn't kill him. He grabbed me and pulled me into the cabin. In the struggle, he broke my transmitter. That's why I couldn't talk to you. Finally, I managed to club him down.
Well, what about the other one?
The other one almost got me. It must have heard the scuffle and came into the cabin with a ray gun. What I did, I guess, was pure reflex. The cabin atmosphere was chlorine, of course, and the greenie didn't have a space suit on. Uh-huh. So I just turned on the oxygen valve in that spare tube. It was like spraying an insect with poison.
Well, you're a brave man, Mullen. I'd have been scared to death. Mullen, what is it? Mullen. An hour later, false hands and all, I was at the controls of the ship, headed for Earth. We'd gotten rid of the chlorinating equipment and restored the oxygen naturally. Mullen was asleep in the cabin under a sedative, or so I thought until the cabin door opened. Mullen, for Pete's sake, get back to bed.
No, I'm quite all right now, really. Do you mind if I watch how you operate the ship?
No, not at all. Sit down. You know, I guess I owe you an apology. I didn't think too much of you.
That's your privilege.
No, it isn't anybody's privilege, Mullen, to despise another. For years now, I've abandoned hope of finding any decency in human beings. I owe you a vote of thanks.
You embarrass me, Mr. Stewart. I didn't do it for any heroic reasons, I assure you. Far from it.
Well, why did you do it, Mullen? That puzzles me very much.
Well, Mr. Stewart, I'm a bookkeeper. 17 years ago, I left Earth to work on Arcturus. I never made much impression on anybody on Earth, although I wanted very much to have people like me. Well, about a year ago, I started to write to my family again. Don't ask me why. And then I asked for a leave of absence to go home after 17 years.
Well, I still don't understand. It wasn't patriotism or love of a woman or money or any of those things. What was it?
Mr. Stewart, haven't you ever been homesick?
Have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features A Gun for Dinosaur by L. Sprague de Camp, a story of hunters in the bloodiest and most ferocious arena of all prehistoric Earth, where hunting reptile heavyweights is no job for human lightweights. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Sea Chute, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by Isaac Asimov, and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Lyle Sudrow, Stan Early, Bob Hastings, Mercer McLeod, Danny Occo, and John Gibson. Your announcer, Bill McCord. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Next week, on a distant planet in a forgotten colony of Earth, a man is ordered to commit a murder. Listen to Skulking Permit on X-1 next week. Let's visit lovable Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
X-1 on Tuned to yesterday from the 8th of February, 1956 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.